This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to your home for everything Squared Circle all over the world. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. I'm your co-host, Scott Criscolo. Great show tonight. One of my favorite guests that I poached from the artist formerly known as Clotheslines and Headlines is on tonight. Technically, he would only be on four times a year, but I'd love to have him on more. But we'll talk about him in a moment. First, though, let me bring in my co-host. He is the co-host of the Kings of Sport, and he is rocking the Al Toon jersey tonight. The Godfather, Nate Milton.
What's going on, brother? I'm in a football mood here, not because of anything going on collegiately or the NFL, but I was flipping through the channels before we got on the mics this evening and got a double feature on VH1 of The Replacements and Remember the Titans. So oh. I am in a good mood. I'm feeling, I love the Al Toon love as an alumnus of the same high school Al Toon attended.
There you go.
I'm feeling that. Of course, Drew Pearson in the building, and a certain gentleman from Philly that played in Indianapolis, who I will not mention because I don't need those problems.
That's right. We don't like to mention anybody from the Phillies, from the Eagles. Now, brother Nate. Now, as Nate, of course, mentioned, it is episode 88 of the Main Event, and he only mentioned one of the Trinity of number 88s that wore the blessed star on the side of their helmet. He, of course, mentioned Drew Pearson, who had two rings, and then, of course, one-third of the Trinity, the playmaker himself, Michael Irvin, and then the current playmaker on the Cowboys, number 88, Dez Bryant. So three 88s playing with the hole in the roof. We talked about Al Toon. Freddie Solomon, ex-49er. He has, what, three rings, I think. Let's see. Anybody else? Any other 88s? Let me think.
You already mentioned Demaryius Thomas.
Demaryius Thomas, there you go. There's got to be a bunch of other 88s. I don't know, when we post, when you're on PoliceBeNation.com and you're listening, under the comments page, post some other, we should start doing that. Post some other number 88s you could think of. Eric Lindros, for Mr. D'Amato, the Ranger fan. Eric Lindros, and I think he's only 88 I can think of in hockey. But anyway, Brother Nate, always
Do you remember
a pleasure.
Pete Metzelaars?
Pete Metzelaars. That's a good one. Now, that voice you hear, because I think he's a Bills fan, poor bastard, he's our business guy here at the Main Event. He was the former business guy on Clotheslines and Headlines, and he's joining us tonight because the third quarter report came out a short time ago for WWE. Mr. Brandon Howard. Brandon, welcome back.
Yes, thank you. I'm a Bills fan by birth, not by choice. But I did live through those four Super Bowls, and I do remember Pete Metzelaars, tight end for the Buffalo Bills in the early 90s. Those are basically my areas of expertise, is like early 90s NFL and professional wrestling.
Two of the greatest things ever. So you don't have like a Sabres jersey or anything like that?
No. I've got some Sabres shirts and stuff.
You didn't go to the Odd when you were a little kid? See, I love the
Odd. I went to the Odd a couple times before they moved. Yeah.
That's awesome. Anyway, by the way, on a side note, Brother Nate, I want your opinion on this. Now that the NBA has, you know, Nike took over the NBA, because I'm a jersey junkie. I love uniforms and that kind of stuff. We're going to have guys on. We have some guests on here on Main Event, even though it's not a wrestling topic. But we may have guys on to talk about sports uniforms, because I'm a jersey and hat junkie. I'm watching a Laker-Celtics right now, because I am a Laker fan. And I don't know if I can deal with this, but the Lakers have gold on, and the Celtics have green on, but they're playing at the Garden. And I can't deal with that. I'm like losing my mind. They should be playing at the Fabulous Forum, and they're not. So I'm a little screwed up here. But now, of course, Nike, they let them wear whatever the hell they want, and that's kind of aggravating. Lakers should be wearing gold at home, nowhere
else. It's very much like NBA 2K style. Like, you can just go in before the game
Yep.
And whatever jersey you want to wear, regardless of whether it's appropriate for the setting or not, is in bounds, I guess.
Yeah, no, it is. And, I mean, the Lakers wore their badass Minneapolis jerseys at home, I think, last week. Yeah, they did. It was last week or the week before. It was last week when they won that big game in overtime against the Wizards. Anyway, tonight they're wearing gold at the Garden against the Celtics, which we have on here in the background. Brandon, let's talk turkey. Let's talk greenbacks, etc. So, give us your overall impressions of the third quarter report and what you just general observations, and we'll break down some other topics within. But what did you gather from hearing the report?
Well, the biggest stories I thought coming out of the report were they projected record OIBDA for 2017 and 2018. So OIBDA is basically their preferred measurement of profit. So you can kind of think of it as profit that they project. They're going to make $110 million in OIBDA this year, whereas they were just projecting $100 million before. So that their OIBDA projection for this year is even higher, and then they even went so far as to make a projection for the entirety of 2018 of at least $115 million. So WWE, despite what we may think of it aesthetically, is still a very profitable business. We got from the Q3 report, also we got a WWE Network update in terms of the number of subscribers that they have. It was 1.5 million, but the WWE Network seems to be slowly moving towards a saturation point, it seems like, where maybe next year, year over year, they'll still be up in terms of subscribers, but you got to wonder when it's going to start to level off and fully mature. It was 1.52 million paid subscribers, and about three-quarters of that, or maybe a little more than three-quarters of that, is from the U.S., and about one quarter from elsewhere in the world. Mm. We also saw that average attendance was down for North America in Q3. So when we're talking about Q3, too, by the way, that's from the time period of April 1st to June 30th. Well, no, I'm sorry, that's Q2. And then Q3 is July 1st to September 30th. So right. We're looking at that period. And this year is the first year that we've had like an entire year of the brand split. So house shows have become not just there were two tours in the past in terms of house shows, like on the weekends. You know, they run TV obviously on Monday and Tuesday now, and then they do their house shows basically Friday through Sunday. And since they've got a Raw and a SmackDown separate rosters now, that they're able to run even more shows. So they run more shows than they did last year, but the average attendance is starting to dip. Like it went below an average attendance of 5,000 for the first time in this quarter.
Well, and you'd have thought that'd have been a problem like 10 years ago. I think that it was actually that it actually just came up as a problem now. But continue. We'll get more into that in a minute. But that number kind of blew me away for a minute. But go ahead.
Sure. Yeah. So the average attendance is down. It's about 4,900, where it had been in the same quarter in the previous 2 years. It had been like 5,300, 5,200, somewhere around that range. So it's slightly down. We're talking in the differences of a few hundred here. But it's still, that's a low point. That's the lowest quarter they've had in a number of years in terms of average attendance. Now, at the same time, they're running more events than ever before. So the total attendance is actually up. And ticket prices are increasing slowly as well. So the revenue is up as well. And the average attendance numbers that I'm referencing include only Raw and SmackDown, only main roster stuff. So then you got to remember that they're running NXT shows too, not just the small Florida shows, but they're running those bigger NXT shows that draw maybe 1,000 people or whatever it is. And that's giving the live events segment a few million dollars as well. So the live events segment of their business, which is one way they break it out, that segment is making more and more money every year as well. So, but this is something I've talked with my partner on WrestleNomics Radio, Chris Harrington, about, and that so the average attendance is down, and what can we account that to? I think some of that you can blame on, well, more of these shows are house shows, right? Because that's the number of shows are increasing, not because they're running more TVs. They're running a few more pay-per-views, but only a few. Most of the increases are from house shows, so it's a higher proportion of house shows. And house shows, of course, are the types of events that do the lowest attendance, right?
Right.
So obviously,
right.
Pay-per-view does the most attendance on average. Raw does the next most, SmackDown the next most, and then house shows, particularly North American house shows, and by that I mean United States and Canada, those have the lowest attendance. So you're putting in more types of events that have a normally lower average attendance. So there's part of that, and part of the fact that you can think that, well, they're running more shows, so maybe they're saturating the markets a little bit. I kind of question that and think, well, the United States is a pretty big country, and I can understand some overlap, but not so much to make such a difference. So the question that Chris and I have tried to think about is, well, is WWE popularity generally declining? And another metric that we looked at to try to get an idea of that were Google searches. This is not something that WWE talks about, but you can go to Google Trends, and we looked at, let's just take the worldwide section. Let's see how many people are searching for WWE worldwide. Let's see how many people are searching for WWE in other major markets. So we looked at the U.S., the United Kingdom, Canada, India, Australia, and Germany. I think those are roughly the six biggest markets. You could debate about maybe the last few. But Google searches in all of those markets are down somewhat. Not so much that their business is about to die or even become not profitable, but it does point to maybe there's been a real decline in interest in 2017.
Now, Brandon, I'm glad you brought up India, because one of the recurring themes, it seems, on this program between Scotty and myself is week after week after week, we have some type of discussion or debate or meeting of the minds when it comes to one Jinder Mahal. And I'm wondering, during the course of the conference, was there any inclination as to how business was doing overseas, and particularly in India, since the time period of this would have been right around, you know, the early part of the Jinder Mahal championship run?
Right. So, yeah, so again, this is what, July 1st to September 30th, and I've written a few articles about Jinder Mahal, or at least referencing him. So he won the title on May 21st, I know now off the top of my head. But no, you'd think that the questions that we would be interested in, maybe those would come up on a conference call, but the types of people who are asking questions, who get to ask questions on the conference call, are financial analysts who basically like advise people on what to invest in, or and like whether or not to invest in WWE, I guess. So these are not necessarily wrestling fans who are watching SmackDown week to week. So unfortunately, no, there was, I don't recall any questions about Jinder Mahal. I think there was something in the conference call before this about something about Jinder Mahal, because he had just won the title. And George Berrio said something to the effect of, well, to some extent, there's a little bit of ethnocentrism in every country or something like that. But they wouldn't get into any specifics.
See, now I just want to, I'm picturing on this conference call one of these financial gurus, if you will, and just like, you know, the way that you guys have handled Bray Wyatt makes me leery about this investment.
Yeah.
I'm not. Meanwhile, I would call and go, well, how you guys are handling Jinder Mahal, I'm all in.
I've heard stories, this is before I was covering it, but I've heard stories of Linda McMahon used to be on these calls when she was the CEO or whatever her title was with WWE. And I remember a story about how some caller on the conference call challenged her about booking or something like that. And she was, I don't know, she gave a very dismissive corporate answer.
But, how could you be running this conference call when you're doped up in a wheelchair and your husband's banging Trish Stratus?
Exactly.
Let's talk about revenue, because now the third quarter is a big deal, because the second quarter, clarify this for me before I ask this question, Brandon.
Sure.
The WrestleMania revenue, which is always their big nugget, and that's, of course, ticket sales for the show itself, NXT, Hall of Fame, 5 days worth of access, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's obviously second quarter revenue, but does that bleed into the third quarter, or is that strictly second quarter revenue?
Well, certainly when it comes to the network, I've heard people call WrestleMania is kind of a loss leader for the WWE network, because they're obviously not charging $60 for it per view like they used to on pay-per-view, but they're collecting $10 a month from these people. And I guess the idea is that we're gonna give you WrestleMania as part of your subscription for $9.99 with the hope that you will stick with us year-round. So you could argue that the WrestleMania money is in all quarters when it comes to the network.
That's a good point. Okay. That's a good point. I didn't even think of that. I'm talking about the real meat and potatoes, though, like access and all the ticket sales and all that, you know, like Mania and NXT and the
Hall
of Fame.
I'm almost sure that would all fall into Q2 because all that stuff happened in April. And
that's what I figured.
April 1st is the beginning of Q2.
Okay. Makes sense. I was just curious. All right. So Are you surprised? Because the third quarter is, other than SummerSlam, obviously each quarter has, I mean, it works out for them. Each quarter has one big show, of course. The fourth quarter's big show is coming up, you know, next weekend.
Yeah.
Did SummerSlam help them out this quarter in terms of revenue? Again, they made, I mean, they made, what, they went up 14% to $186.4 million for the third quarter. And they, I mean, third straight year they were in beat, they were in the borough and did pretty well. Yeah. It's already rumored, it's already pretty much confirmed that it's back in Brooklyn next summer. There was rumors they were going to go back to LA. They, you know, this was like a 3-year thing for SummerSlam. I mean, what a boon they found, huh? To be in Brooklyn, cuz they made $1 million 2 years ago when SummerSlam first was in Brooklyn in 2015. And now they added TakeOver, and now they're at Barclays for 2 days, which seems to now be the new thing.
Right.
How big is that for them now that SummerSlam is back to being the legit number two show now and makes the third quarter a little heftier than it had been in the last couple of years?
I guess it's, you think it's number two above Royal Rumble.
I do. I've always thought that. That's just my opinion, but I've always thought that.
I know, like, historically, in terms of the pay-per-view buys, Royal Rumble would almost always beat SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. But I suppose you could make an argument, especially how TakeOver Brooklyn has kind of become the WrestleMania for NXT. And that's at least almost sold out in all, what would it be, 3 years that they've done it there now?
Yep.
And this is something I've talked with Mookie, too, is that, you know, why do they continue to stay in Brooklyn? Do you think maybe they're going to exhaust that market, and why not go to L.A. or why not go somewhere else? And our thought was that maybe they're getting a good deal from Barclays or whatever. Maybe they're getting, you know, a preferential, you know, lease. Maybe the expenses are lower because they're able to, you know, make a deal with Brooklyn or with Barclays to do multiple events in this city. So you give us a better rate. And then we save money that way, and the show becomes even more profitable. Mm-hmm. That's just speculation. That's nothing that they say publicly, but that's just a guess. And with ticket prices going up more and more, especially the premium tickets, and I'm talking like stuff on the floor or getting close to front row.
Right.
I believe, what's really driving the increases in ticket prices. So the gates get to be bigger and bigger, even though you're still in the same venue with the same size.
That's true.
I don't know if that answers any of your questions.
No, it did, actually, because, well, you know, the funny thing is, as a fan, and Nate, please chime in, I've always thought that the third quarter, or the summer, going into the fall, was always a quiet time of the year for WWE, historically. Yeah, they have their big build to SummerSlam, but admittedly, you can argue, I mean, you could say that the Attitude Era kind of did this. I think the Attitude Era shifted the balance of power of the pay-per-views from at least the number two slot from SummerSlam to the Royal Rumble. I think before that, in the Federation era, I thought SummerSlam was always the bigger show.
I perceived that as a kid too, yeah. I always thought, it surprised me when I would like read the Observer, though the Rumble's bigger, you know, they do more buys at Rumble and stuff like that. I was like, really?
Well, the Rumble always has the surprise for two things, who wins and who like shows up. Because historically, over the last few years, the Rumble has become like the, you know, we're going to fill 26 of the 30 slots, so who are these other four guys? And that automatically brings people to the building. And it also depends on the venue. Like, I mean, I'm going to the Rumble. We went 3 years ago in Philly. Philly's a great venue for anything. Their sports teams and their fans are all, well, never mind. But, I mean, it's a cool wrestling venue. And then they've had the ones in California, and, you know, it always depends to me on region, but I feel like now SummerSlam has kind of trumped it. And I think NXT has helped do that. I don't know what your thoughts are on that, Nate. But I kind of agree with what Brandon said about TakeOver Brooklyn becoming to NXT's WrestleMania. And that has kind of weighed SummerSlam as the bigger weekend than the Rumble.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's something I hadn't thought of until Brandon just brought it up. But I think it adds something to the SummerSlam weekend now. And I'm like you, Scotty. Historically, I've always viewed, in my head at least, SummerSlam as being the bigger show because, you know, back in that Federation time period, it seemed that was the WrestleMania of the summer. But I'd say lately, you know, you can make the argument the Rumble is more important and more of a draw for not only the hardcore fans, but casual fans as well, due to the surprises and things of that nature. But I'm wondering, and maybe Brandon can speak on this, because we've had discussions about these four-day weekends, you know, particularly when you talk about something like WrestleMania, where you get NXT, the big event, then Raw and SmackDown in the same town. Is that something, Brandon, that you feel is ultimately positive in terms of profit, or is it something that could end up, you know, burning out a territory, if you will?
I think as long as they change up the cities as the economics demand, I think they'll be fine. I remember thinking before they started doing Survivor Series as an NXT weekend as well, yeah, just do a takeover on all the big four pay-per-views and make each one of those weekends a destination weekend, and you're distributing them out evenly throughout the year, pretty much, right? With January, April, August, November, so it's not like one date is too close to the next, where you're, which is kind of what's going on, I think, with New Japan. At least that's the talk, right? Is that they're going to run this show in late March, and you're asking people to travel then, and a lot of people are going to want to travel in early April for WrestleMania. So anyway, my point is that I think they're distributed apart enough that it's going to be okay, and they're not going to demand too much of their fans. And it's not like the same fans, some of them will. Some of the super hardcores will go to all of them in a given year. But it's not like it's going to be all the same people. It may have to do with how much free money they've got or what mood they're in or how interested they are in WWE. But yeah, I think there's the fan base in some ways at least is becoming more hardcore, or at least there's a fan base that's getting more aware of what wrestling's capable of and what kind of different wrestling there is out there. And I think NXT somewhat consciously and deliberately is meant to address that. And that this is where they use this buzzword. They super serve their fans. That's what they're doing with NXT and with 205 Live and with the UK tournament and the Cruiserweight Classic and the Mae Young Classic. They're super serving these hardcore fans. So I don't know. I guess they're trying to address the issue of frustration, I think, throughout the fan base that, you know, the main roster product can be pretty unsatisfying, pretty frustrating. The more you watch it, the more you get punished. But at least there's this NXT and there's maybe 205 Live, but mostly NXT. That's really good. And especially the TakeOver shows, at least in my opinion, are fantastic. And it just allows them to get more money out of their fans. And that's the big narrative, right? And there's truth to it that they're going to get more money out of the same or fewer fans. And that's how you do it, is you make this not just a show, not just a destination show where you're going to attract people from all over the country or all over the world, but you're going to make it an entire weekend of events. Yeah. And it kind of reflects something that they're, I think, going to do. Well, I'm almost sure they're going to do in the near future is tier the network. So where you have the $9.99 tier that you give to people who are $9.99 worth of interested, and then you maybe have a $15 tier for people who are willing to pay $15, and with that $15, I believe they're going to get things other than WWE, things like Progress and ICW probably, and maybe even some others, because we saw a survey, I don't know if you guys heard, there was a survey a couple months ago or so, where they were even surveying, like, how many of you are interested in TNA or Ring of Honor, or I think even New Japan was on there. So I don't think that they're going to sign those brands. My Amazon Alexa's talking to me. My bad. But
she's an idiot. I'm sorry. I don't know that one. That's all she says. My friend has it too. She's a bitch.
Pretty much.
So I'm sorry. What is TNA? We're asking the same question, Alexa.
Yeah. Unless she goes, excuse me, that is inappropriate. They were a bad tag team in 2000.
Ask her who her favorite professional wrestler is. She has one.
She does?
But yeah, she does. Ask her something. Do you have one?
I don't have one. My friend's got one. I'll have to do that. She's a favorite wrestler?
Yeah. Mine's called Amazon. So Amazon, who's your favorite professional wrestler?
My favorite would be Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah. You jackass.
No. Yeah.
Because Amazon Alexa said so. All right.
I apologize to people listening to WrestleNomics Radio where I did the exact same bit. But
that's all right. Let's talk about the net. Well, Nate, did you have anything else on this before we moved on to something else?
I wanted to get back to that issue of pricing real quick, because that was one of the questions I had for Brandon. Because it seems every time we talk to Brother Brandon, it seems like that price point of the network comes up. And, you know, granted, I love it. You know, it's $9.99. It's a beautiful price. But I've always felt that not only was that a detriment to the WWE and the fact that they're underselling themselves, but I also felt like it hurt some of the other streaming services around, because it kind of devalued other organizations and other streaming platforms that you know, are trying to make a buck and don't have, you know, they can't absorb the loss like the WWE could.
You're talking about wrestling streaming services.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
They can't absorb that, you know, having such a low price point for the service that they offer. And I'm wondering, you know, with this tiered system, A, when do you think that something like this could be implemented? And B, do you think that it'll be a good selling point for, you know, those hardcore fans to be super served, like you say?
I think it will. I think when they bring it out, I'm pretty confident that they will. And they speak with language that makes it sound like it's an inevitability. I think they'll bring it out around a WrestleMania, and I say that based on they brought out this network as itself just before a WrestleMania, and that's the time where they have the most eyes on them. I look at Google searches all the time, and you know, April is always the time where they have the most interest. But I mean, to your point, Nate, about how it's $9.99, I think like that's an example of what a corporate giant like WWE can do, and I think the $9.99 price point, yeah, it makes it harder for them to maybe get the most value out of it. They could obviously, I completely agree, they could charge more than $9.99 for this service right now, and they would be making more money and they would be more profitable. But I kind of wonder, I don't know if this is the if they actually sit in the boardroom and say this, but I think this is the effect nonetheless, whether it's deliberate or not, is that I think what they're doing is they've underpriced this product, so they get everybody in on the bus, get everybody in at this great value, this great price, and then years on, which is coming up pretty soon, I think they start to create tiers. I don't think they'll ever take anything away from the $9.99 tier. I think the $9.99 tier will always be what it is, but they'll offer you more for a higher price, and maybe eventually that $9.99 price will go up, you know, once they have those tiers. It's kind of like how Netflix is doing stuff. There's various options with Netflix in terms of like screens and HD quality or whatever.
Yeah.
And then eventually they move the prices. Like the prices for Netflix are starting to inch up, right? But in terms of like affecting other services, I think like this is the example of what a corporate giant can do. They can afford to underprice their product now. Yep. And even still be profitable on it. I mean, the network segment is still profitable. It may or may not be as profitable as pay-per-view. I did a research project last year, and I determined that it's probably not as profitable as pay-per-view would have been if they had continued to go down the pay-per-view only route. But it's still profitable, and it's underpriced probably. And in effect, what that causes is it makes FlowSlam out there charging $20 a month look like fools. Like, you're charging me $20 a month for something that's not major league, for something that doesn't look as professional, and so on. And you know, that applies to every other streaming service that prices itself at $9.99 or more. You know, you're trying to market to people a product that is not as high level, not as major league, but you've got maybe higher expenses, you've got bigger margins to overcome, you're not a corporate giant. You haven't got as much money behind you, and you can't lose money for as long as WWE could, and they're not losing money anyway.
Now, the thing with the stream in terms of other network, obviously, and Nate and I talked about this a couple episodes ago about Impact's streaming service, which, I mean, they have a lot of stuff on there, but the interface is pretty shitty. It's clearly not as good as WWE has. Now, obviously, it took WWE like a couple months to kind of work out their kinks, because early on in 2014, when the network first started, it was ridiculously frustrating. They definitely took the lead in terms of the interface, and worked itself out. I mean, a lot of us, you know, kind of had no choice. But could you in the future see them going to some of these other platforms, and maybe, I mean, is it legit? I mean, we talk about it, but I don't think you could change up the tier and take stuff off and put it like somebody said that they could dump the big four and make them and make you go to $14.99 if you want the Rumble Mania. The others you can have live.
Yeah.
But if you want the big four live, then you got to bump it up to $14.99. I think it's too late to do that.
No, I don't think they'll do that. At least not until there's another tier for a long time. Because I think they're not stupid. I mean, it feels like they're stupid when you watch the TV sometimes. But on the business side, they know what would happen. They know that there would be a lot of customer upheaval if they did something like that. And I don't think they'll do that. I think maybe once there's multiple tiers to the network after a few years, they might take that $9.99 price point and move it up to $12.99 or something, and then maybe create a free tier or a $4.99 tier that just allows you to look at the linear stream except for blacking out pay-per-views or something. But I don't think they're going to take things away from people who are accustomed to it, at least not in an abrupt way. They may wean, you know, but they're not going to abruptly take anything away from customers, I don't think.
I think they would grandfather it if they did. I don't think you're going to see $9.99 people that have been here since the beginning. I mean, they could look back at subscriptions. I mean, I literally got mine the day of, and I have not not gotten rid of it since. And I know a lot of people that are like that.
Yeah.
But let's take New Japan for instance. And I've said this to Nate many times. I've talked to Chad Campbell about it many times. New Japan World? I think it's called
JPW World. Yep.
Yeah. JPW World. Now I've said this multiple times. I've seen the site and I've seen the on demand, and even when you click on the little button that says translate to English, I think maybe 8 words translate to English. The rest of it's still in Japanese.
It's pretty rough. I have a lot of friends who I've said this on Twitter. Like I have a lot of friends who watch New Japan, but I don't know of any of them who actually subscribe to New Japan World. I think a lot of people have their eye on New Japan. I think the wrestling fandom is becoming more and more aware and more familiar with New Japan, but I don't think that they're watching it in a legitimate way for the most part, because there's just a lot of stuff, not so much on YouTube. I think they keep YouTube pretty clear, but Daily Motion's really easy to find stuff of New Japan. And, there's just like when an event happens and people start posting those matches, and it's hard to chase after that. But yeah, this is something I've been yelling about, is that they have an English login page, but it's still the entire interface. If you're not familiar with, and if you don't have like 10 years of being a Japanese wrestling fan, so you're used to dealing with a lot of Japanese language and you're used to having to figure stuff out and jump through hoops, those people are all right. But, my friends who are just picking up on New Japan for the first time in the last couple of years, that's still really intimidating, especially when you're being asked to put your credit card number into something. And then there's questions of like, well, am I going to be able to cancel this? And besides all that, besides the accessibility issues in terms of the language, there's accessibility issues in terms of I can't put – there's no New Japan World app on mobile. There's no New Japan World app on Apple TV or on Roku. I've heard it's on Fire Stick, but I can't find a person yet to tell me if that's like an actual app interface that I can like scroll through or whatever. You guys don't have a Fire Stick, do you?
I actually have – I don't have a stick. I have the the original Fire TV. So while you're talking, I can –
you should see if you can get NJPW World.
Let's see.
Chrome – there's supposed to be some sort of accessibility through Chromecast as well. But, no game consoles either. And they have this global vision, Kidani's talked about. And we've seen them run in L.A. back in July, and they're going to run in L.A. again in March, that they want to – capture a global audience, and to some extent they've been successful on that. I mean, I think Wrestle Kingdom 11 with the Kenny Omega and Okada match created a lot of buzz and got the attention of a lot of non-Japanese fans.
Yeah.
And
I actually on the original Amazon Fire TV, there is an NJPW World.
Oh, breaking news.
Yeah, let's enjoy New Japan Pro Wrestling World on TV. New Japan Pro Wrestling World is a service that allows you to view live broadcasts of the main competitions of New Japan Pro Wrestling and enormous game footage over the past 46 years. In addition to being able to enjoy the latest tournament in real time, images of past fighting, hot fighting, and name winning are added more and more. In addition, original documentary, which can be seen only with this service, World Pro Wrestling related program, etc., are also being delivered. You could tell this was
This is automatically translated.
Yeah.
It's like tournaments is somewhere or another. It's kind of synonymous with matches or events or something like that.
All right, I'm going to download it and then go talk to Chad. Now,
the thing you just read is sort of emblematic of what the translation really is like on NGPW Rule. A lot of it is just automated, I think, if it is manually translated, it's translated by somebody who's maybe doesn't have perfect English. So it's like there's some English on there, but it's not always the words that most English speakers would use.
All right. So other streams. Let's talk about this for a minute. Other streaming. Just on a side note, at least on Fire TV, there's that World Wrestling Network, which has a lot of indie stuff. Obviously, the WWE Network. What is this one? Is this Fight Network? The Fight app, which I think has a lot of TNA, I think, on there. The Pro Wrestling Network. This has a bunch of indie stuff, I believe. I think it has Pro Wrestling. I think this one is the one that has Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. I think is on this one.
PWG, I think you can't get VOD of PWG. You can only get DVD, except for after a year, High Spots will sell it. And I think if you subscribed, I haven't subscribed to the High Spots Wrestling Network yet, but I've heard if you subscribe to the High Spots Wrestling Network, you can get the PWG library, just everything that's at least a year old.
Oh, okay. Now Ring of Honor has, at this point, they have, 15 years worth of stuff.
Yeah.
And they haven't even approach the subject, because I still think a part of me thinks that Sinclair isn't sure if they actually want to keep it.
If you're an ROH Ringside member, there's some stuff that they offer you if you're a member on their VOD throughout the years. It's a small percentage of their library. I wondered too if they would have issues with the music, if they would have to block it out like they do on W Network. But there's always like an interview with Joe Koff, like once a month. He does an interview with somebody before a show to do pub, and he talks about says they're thinking about doing an OTT service. But who knows? This is Sinclair after all. I'll believe it when I see it. But who knows?
Well, as I'm kind of perusing through the app right now, and it's definitely very Americanized. Like there's a lot of they have like. The titles of the clips are in English. So, there's that Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho thing going on. Interesting. I'll have to take a look at this. They actually have Death Before Dishonor on here, so they obviously, New Japan and Ring of Honor kind of work together. You could go back to the 70s.
You can.
On here, which is kind of cool.
Like the Carl Gotch and Antonio Inoki match.
Let's see what this is. January 29th, 1976 in Osaka Prefectural Gymnasium. Antonio Inoki versus Tiger Jeet Singh, which means we're going to get some pencil lead in eyeballs. When he used to feud with the Sheik in Detroit, damn it. May 30th, 1978. This looks like Inoki and Andre. Oh, fucking A. We got some interesting shit here. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of good old stuff on there, too. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. I got to be honest with you. I think I like the interface on the stick, on the Fire TV more than I do on their website. This is actually better, I think. Anyway, okay. Anyway, I have a new toy here I can play with. Anyway, thanks, Brandon.
It's good to learn too that it's actually accessible on Fire Stick. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's on anything else though. I don't think it's on Roku, and I don't think it's on. On. Is it on Apple TV? I doubt it. Did you say there's an extension on Chromecast?
I've never used Chromecast. I don't have like a frame of reference to say what that means. But I do see like Chromecast icons on their window. I'm almost positive it's not on Roku. I have an Apple TV. I have the fourth generation, which I think is the newest one, and there is no NJPW World on that.
Oh, okay.
But there is, there's Powerbomb.tv on Apple TV. So like, Powerbomb.tv can get on Apple TV, but NJPW World can't. I can't imagine why, what they're thinking, and if they're really dedicated to this global vision, which my God, they must be, right? Like they're doing shows in the U.S. They're booking Jericho now, these are all great ideas. There's things that they should be doing, but they're not following up on the OTT end of it, And as we're talking about, there's good content on there. There's the events that they're doing currently, which are acclaimed, and then there's some really good library stuff that they have as well.
I was just going to say, it feels like they're right on the cusp, and this is something we talked about with Pete a few months ago, I believe, in terms of New Japan expanding over here into North America. And it's like, man, between the technology barrier and the language barrier that we've talked about, it's like, man, I think if they tightened up one or two things, not that they would be, you know, overtake the WWE in any way, stretch, or form. But I do think, you know, for people that are complaining about WWE programming or wanting a more viable option than a TNA or even a Ring of Honor, I think that New Japan could definitely make some inroads if they tightened up their act on some of these things.
Yeah, I agree. If you want to get into, like, beyond my opinion about business, I think pro wrestling has a lot of potential, I think, as a medium in terms of not just its popularity, but, like, I think pro wrestling could be really good. You look at the talent that WWE has, and you look at the booking that they have. They have some of the best talent in the world. You could argue that they have the best roster they've ever had in terms of talent. Yeah. And I think on the whole, pro wrestlers just get better and better every year lately. So I think WWE, there's no reason why WWE couldn't be booked a lot better. And their booking may or may not really make a huge difference to business, but I think better booking could only help and could only make them make more money. And I think there's one promotion that's, you know, drawing crowds of more than 1,000 people on a regular basis that's exceeding that potential, and I think that's New Japan. And, like, I wish wrestling would be better throughout the world, but it's mostly just better over there.
I was just going through the World Wrestling Network app, and, I mean, maybe it's because it's just a free preview, and I wouldn't pay for it, but it seems like the only thing that's on there right now is Evolve.
Okay, and this is WWE, and this is the thing with Evolve.
Yeah, it's pretty much all it is. Now, I'm opening up the Fight Network one, which I know is not just wrestling. I know there's boxing on here and probably some other.
Yeah, I think there's even All Japan on there. Obviously, they sell Ring of Honor pay-per-views through that app.
So
they recently started being All Japan, I heard, yeah.
What's the merchandise? Let's switch gears for a minute, Brandon, while I'm playing around with this. What'd you hear about merchandise? Did they talk about, like, you know, DVD sales, shirts, that kind of thing? Because, and I've said this many times to a lot of people, back in the day, I never remember this many sales on shops.com, ShopZone, whatever you want to call it, as there are now. What's the merchandise situation with the company right now?
Over a longer period of time, like over the last several years, merchandise in terms of revenue, they don't give us units of sale for merchandise, but they will tell us the amount of revenue and the amount of OIBDA they've made. And, like, year over year, so they split it out into venue merchandise. So this is obviously merchandise that's sold at shows. And then they show WWE Shop, which is stuff obviously sold through WWE Shop and through other online retailers that they have deals with, like Amazon. I might have just turned it on. No, it didn't hear me. Okay. And so, yeah, they're making more and more money. I know I don't have it in front of me right now, but I think the amount of merchandise sold per head at shows this past quarter was down sort of to reflect the decrease in average attendance. But, yeah, they're selling more and more, at least more and more dollars worth of merchandise at shows, and they're selling more and more online. I think a lot of that has to do with just the international markets that they've been able to open up online that they didn't have before. So it's like their market is getting bigger as well.
I was hoping you would say her name so she could say, my favorite wrestler is Jinder Mahal.
maybe someday. Maybe the Indian version.
I was going to say, that's the Indian version.
I'm not doing an Indian voice. We don't need any tweets and emails. So,
though, you could do an impression of an Indian man doing an impression of a Japanese man, because that's cool now.
That's quite true.
You mentioned DVD sales, too. So DVDs, they call it home entertainment. That's the segment that includes basically nothing but DVD sales and VOD sales. That segment is going down and down. Like, that is the one segment that they're willing to be open and say, yeah, that's one segment that we're going to see make less money over time. And I think that's just, obviously, there's a lot of cannibalization going on there with the WWE Network, because most of the things that you would have bought on DVD in years prior, you can just get on the WWE Network. They still do their DVD releases that obviously aren't put on the network right away, so there's still value for the consumer in that regard. But, yeah, I mean, this is DVDs, physical media. This is a dying industry, I think. Or at least it's going to hit a very low ceiling at some point.
Which is sad because I think that obviously you can get the content, the main content, the main feature on the network. But one of the things I loved about the DVDs that, you know, they haven't seemed to be able to translate over to a streaming service or digital media quite yet is the idea of commentaries or having various alternate audio tracks. I think that's something that always added value to a DVD for me. Like, I'm remembering, you know, Stone Cold doing commentary over one of his matches. And it's like, you know, that little things like that to me gave added value to a DVD, which unfortunately we just don't have yet with the network's shows.
That's something that they've tested in surveys, and it's one of those things, like, I don't know why they haven't done it yet. Maybe it's maybe there's some technology limitations, although you can watch recent pay-per-views and you can choose your language, right? You can choose Spanish or whatever language you want.
Yeah.
So they do have some capability to change the audio track, apparently. But yeah, it's something they haven't done yet. They're clearly thinking about it because they've surveyed on it to see how much interest there is in it. And maybe that'll be included in the $14.99 tier someday.
Is the Fight Network, is this free?
There's a lot of free stuff on there, I believe, and they do ad revenue shares with people who provide content that's free.
Because I just, I'm buzzing through the TNA. Nate, you'd be all over this. This is like your life right here. I mean, I'm going through, they have all the pay-per-views, and I just randomly clicked on one, which ended up actually being Genesis 2010, by the way. Mr. Milton, do you remember what the main event of Genesis 2010 was?
That would have been right after Hogan and Bischoff came in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been, let's see, not Hardy and Van Dam. That wasn't that one.
Kurt and AJ.
Ah, yeah.
And then the following, against all odds, Joe and AJ. So I clicked on it. Styles and RVD was Sacrifice.
Yeah.
So Sting and RVD was Slammiversary. Anyway, my point is I just clicked on Genesis and I was waiting for, like, you know, put in your login or whatever, and the thing just started.
Yeah.
The show just started, so I'm like, oh, shit. You know? Okay.
I don't know. You can, there's this app, too, called Pluto TV.
And oh, yes. Yes, I know Pluto TV very well, actually. And they mostly stick to... I think they mostly stick to like 06 and 07.
Yeah. It's a linear stream too, isn't it? You can't just like go through the library and be like, I want to watch this.
It's a channel. It's a stream. Yeah, it's a stream. Yeah.
And I've got something else on my Apple TV because when the Global Wrestling Network launched, they said it's on Roku and Apple TV, fourth generation. So I went into my Apple TV and I went into the App Store and I looked for it and okay, here it is, Impact. So I downloaded it and like I opened it up. And I haven't looked at it in maybe a week or so I could be wrong by now. But it was just like, it's kind of like what you're describing. It's like you can go through the library. I don't know how complete it is, but you can go through the library and you can find a lot of their pay-per-views and a lot of their TV shows, and you can just watch it like on demand. Mm. There's no cost. I've never paid any money for this. But,
which might explain the financial state.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that TNA pretty much gives away all of their crap for anybody to watch anytime. It is kind of funny.
It's really sad just to watch that company just fall over itself again and again and again. And I just think it's just like the soul of WCW just being reincarnated over and over and over again. And I've heard people talk about how, like, well, maybe if Eric Bischoff had gotten Fusion Media together, I don't know if it would be any different. I kind of feel like wrestling promotions, and I'm an indie wrestler, so I've told this story on various levels, but I don't feel like wrestling promotions really die. Their souls just get reincarnated into new promotions that have a lot of the same culture and the same habits and values. And I think like WWF became WWE and WCW became TNA and ECW kind of became Ring of Honor. And there's obviously dissimilarities there, but I think that's kind of how
it is. The real, like, the saddest thing to me about the Anthem deal and the Fight Network, and obviously I'm biased here, but when you have the wrestling losses kind of bleed into the other business. And, you know, you see, you know, the loss of somebody like John Pollock or Wei Tang or Robin Black, Corey Erdman. It's like, man.
Live audio wrestling is gone now.
Yeah, like, live audio wrestling.
I live in Buffalo, and I live like a two-hour drive from Toronto. It's like just over Lake Ontario. And I remember like in the Attitude Era, you know, when wrestling was super popular and I was a teenager and like it was on Sunday nights. I think it started at like 1 a.m. too, so technically Monday. And like they would do like a post pay per view show, and there was a pay per view almost every weekend because it was the late 90s. And yeah, I remember like turning the stereo just right so I could get the signal on AM radio. But yeah, I kind of grew up watching that stuff and listening to that stuff, and that's where I first got exposed to Dave Meltzer. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And now you kind of gutted that whole operation in order to, you know, keep Impact afloat, and it's still like it's not out of the woods yet. So I'm as somebody that has always been a fan of TNA and somebody that has been invested in the company, not financially, thank God, but somebody has been invested from a viewer standpoint. Like, I know we've done the TNA is dead story time and time again over the years, but this one feels a little more prescient than some of the other ones, because it's like, yeah, I wonder how long Anthem is going to take these losses and have it affect their other businesses before they're like, yeah, we're out.
And then who's going to step in to save it then? I don't know. I've seen this company on the brink of death. We've all seen it on the brink of death so many times that, you know, like maybe somebody will swoop in to save it. But or maybe it'll just go out with a whimper. You know,
well, listen,
instead of a bang, but.
I would pay whatever this Fight Network thing is. I would pay $20 a month to watch a pay-per-view that had the Johnsons as a tag team and Scott Steiner's greatest TNA matches. I mean, who wouldn't pay $20 a month for that? Come on. Nate would. Or Kevin Nash's greatest matches? Kevin Nash's greatest matches that didn't involve a snapped quad? I mean, come on. But seriously, though, I mean, let's give TNA the benefit of the doubt in the sense that they do survive somehow, literally giving all this crap away. Now, I'm surprised this. Now, here's a funny thing, Nate, or Brandon. I'm curious, actually, both of you guys. Here's where Impact or TNA, unless this is a different deal, in my opinion, doesn't pay attention. Because you would think if they have their own on demand, why are they still allowing all these other apps to have all their stuff? Look at WWE. WWE yanked like 80% of their crap off of. And they got that stupid lawyer guy trolling YouTube, you know, breaking the kneecaps of all of our friends. Meanwhile, TNA just has all their – they're like a cheap slut. I mean, they've got their shit all over the place still. I mean,
right.
Isn't that
what's
weird?
The incentive? What's the incentive for me to pay – I think it was at $7.99 for Global Wrestling Network.
Exactly.
What's the incentive for me to subscribe to that service when – like we just said, like we can go on the Fight Network apparently and find all this stuff.
I mean, guys, we're literally sitting here looking at it. They have – I mean – Nate, this is a gold mine for you. They have all 67 of the NWA TNA Asylum pay-per-views. All of them. They're right here. My Jeff Jarrett dreams have come true.
See, and I don't know if that's a function of trying to serve two masters, because you would think that Anthem obviously wants the income, but on the other hand, they need content for this app. Yeah. And so it's like, yeah, are you trying to rob Peter to pay Paul with this thing?
Right. And you would think maybe they got bought by Anthem and now finally they're under new ownership. Maybe management will improve. But I have no idea what's going on. And we heard Ed Nordholm do some interviews on the law, and I think with The Observer as well, where he says in both interviews he uses the term, "I drew the short straw," as if he's like he's the one who got the bad luck to have to clean up this mess. And it's, you know, between that and the Jeff Jarrett stuff, it's just, you know, it's kind of mind-blowing, but it's kind of like, yeah, if it was going to happen, yeah, it would happen there.
Well, it is totally, to me, like when the deal first went down with Anthem coming in, it felt like a TV company that saw this as a way to get cheap content.
Yeah, maybe they look at it like Sinclair looks at Ring of Honor, and that you don't even need it to make money because now that you own it, you're not paying the TV rights fees that's still being paid in the UK and in India for their TV deals in those two countries. So this is Anthem, if you don't know, is the Canadian company that owns the Fight Network, and they air Impact Wrestling. So Anthem is not having to pay anything anymore to Impact or whatever it's called now to air their product. And as far as we know, the Pop TV deal in the U.S. is like an ad revenue share. There's no rights fees involved. And so there's very little money being made there. But at least they're on TV on a sort of, you know, accessible cable TV channel that and not that many people watch, but at least a few hundred thousand people are still watching them every week in the U.S. But yeah, they still get money from the U.K. and India.
We'll say that's
about it.
That might be their saving grace financially right now is those international deals.
It is. That's the only revenue that they really have, right? Because they don't sell tickets. Nope. You saw they're paying people to sit in the seats. You heard that, right?
Oh, yeah, my initial thought was, why weren't they doing this when they came to Norfolk? Because I could have made made a cool $50 that night.
Wow, really? That's what they're charging? Holy shit. So here's what they have. I know we kind of went off the rails a little bit here, but that's what we do here on Main Event, Brandon. Now, this is what they have on Fight Network. This is what their menu is. They've got all the Impact. I mean, they have Impact from this year, Impact episodes. Now, the latest one they have is October 26th. They're probably, a couple weeks behind. Inside Impact, TNA Epics, whatever the fuck that is. Looks like the I don't know. Looks like the maybe it's the DVD. Maybe one night only.
This is the Fight app or the Fight Network.
Fight
app?
Network app.
Okay.
One night onlys, and then all the pay per views, including the Asylum year. So all those, you know, TNA end of number 67 or whatever that goes all the way to October 22nd of 03. This TNA's Greatest Matches, Unfinished Business, Legends, British Boot Camp, Fight Now, Fight News Now, which looks like this is something different. Now that they have other stuff here. Retrospective, Five Rounds, Insane ICW, Insane Championship Wrestling, British Wrestling Weekly, whatever that is. K1, KSW, I don't know what KSW is. Interbox, Pancrase?
That's the Japanese shoe promotion.
Yeah.
Pancrase, M1 Challenge, Fighting Spirit, isn't that what's his face is fighting? Isn't that Bix's thing?
Fighting Spirit Magazine?
Yeah, isn't that his thing? Classic Boxing,
occasionally for
Classic Boxing. This is kind of cool. KOTV Boxing Classic, sweet. Is there any Tyson on here? Then regular looks like Random Boxing, Maurice. I don't know any of these dudes. Ring of Combat, Championship Fight, Infusion, World Combat Games, Deep. Global Fighting Championship, Cage Warriors Championship, XFC, and Legend.
Is there any Smash Wrestling on there?
I don't know. No Smash Wrestling. So, this can't all be free. I mean, is it? I don't even see a place to log in. What the fuck did I find here? I found Nate Milton's life for the next... brother, let me tell you something, brother. You want to do a live watch of Glory Road 2000 or Victory Road 2004? I am there.
I'm off tomorrow too. Yeah, I think my day is. I know how my day will be spent.
Do you remember the main event of the cover of Victory Road 2004 was AJ? Oh, it was Jarrett and Hardy in a ladder match for the world title.
Yeah, because that was the first Jeff Hardy run.
Yes. Yep, when he was, after he fumbled over himself at No Way Out 03 against Jericho, it looked like he doesn't remember being there. Anyway, so it's been a great segment, Brandon. Thank you. You've been awesome. Last question.
Thank you.
Looking ahead to the fourth quarter, what do you think? Thumbs up, thumbs down? Did they seem optimistic? Well, of course, they'll be optimistic. They're not going to say it sucks, but what are your thoughts on the fourth quarter?
I think they're very good at projecting their revenue and, they're very good at projecting their OIBDA and the revenue and their network subscribers because a lot of the variables are within the WWE Network subscribers, and because they have such a strong analytics department, which the things we hear is that they're hiring more and more in analytics and they're really building up the strength of this analytics department, and because... Now they have this direct-to-consumer service called the WWE Network where they have all this information about you now, and they have all the, not just personal information about you in terms of demographic information, but they know what you watch on the WWE Network and how much you watch. So they talk a lot about doing really customized marketing. But anyway, they have this really good analytics department that I think makes very accurate projections. They always give them within 2%, and they... So far as I know, they always land pretty close to within their projections. So, like I said earlier, they project $110 million for the entire year of 2017, and the last quarter of that will be determined after they make their Q4 report. That will be sometime in February, I think. But yeah, I think, you know, and again, that's an upgrade from $100 million of profit to $110 million of profit. And I think they're going to, I don't think they would just say that to exaggerate or to be overly optimistic. I think they have very good reasons to make that projection. So, and their projection for W Network subscribers for Q4 was, let's see here, $1.47 million, plus or minus 2%. And they've got, like I said, they got a pretty good record of making accurate predictions when it comes to that. So I believe it will be within 2% of 1.47 million subscribers. And that's going to be down from the previous quarter, but they know it's coming. So the stock market, the investors will know it's coming, and that's kind of built into that, to the stock price, which, by the way, the stock price really grew strongly following this quarterly report. I believe it's up to, like, is it $24 a stock a share? If I can look it up real quick, $27.26 as of close of business today. So that's well up from where it was when the stock price crashed back in 2014, when there was all this speculation about what the W Network was capable of and what their TV rights deals were capable of. They thought they were going to get maybe triple their TV rights fees, but they got, I don't know, something like under double. They still got a big increase, which is what drives the biggest segment of their revenue today is TV rights, but they got something less than they expected. So the stock price ballooned up to something like $25 per share and then crashed back down. Mm-hmm. But now they're back up, getting close to that point again. And so if you've, to make a long story short, if you've made an investment in WB stock in like late 2014, you've hung on to it to this point, you've made a decent investment. You've made like, maybe if you bought it at like $12 or $13 a share, you've doubled your investment, which for a stock is pretty good.
That's very good.
Over a few years, yeah.
All right. Now, it says the Fight Network 30-day free trial. So maybe after 30 days.
Oh.
It,
we don't have to log in. How do they know when 30 days is up?
So that's what I don't. I can't find a login. I don't see a login anywhere. Right?
And you've never logged into
Greeny
this
sitting
before.
Next to me. I don't see a login anywhere. So only TNA would put their stuff on a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, right? I can't see anything. It's fucking wild. Actually, to be honest with you, I didn't see. Let me go to the New Japan app. I didn't see a login for that either. Weird. Brandon. Always a pleasure, man. And we're going to have you come on and maybe we'll talk about some other fun things. Maybe we'll talk, the greatness that is Thurman Thomas. What do you think?
For sure. We'll do a – because I was really big into Super Techno Bowl, and that's where a lot of the stuff got really ingrained into my brain.
Super Techno was awesome. Regular Techno was awesome. Brandon Howard, everybody. And tell everybody where you can – if this is the first time they're hearing you, where can they find your stuff?
Yeah, most notoriously, you can find me on Twitter at Brand Thurston, BrandThurston. You can read all my written work. I write stuff about WWE business, pro wrestling business. Sometimes I write columns and stuff. You can find all that at Fightful.com. You can follow my wrestling school on various social media platforms at Graps Anonymous, where I do some pro wrestling training in the Lackawanna, Buffalo, New York area. And you can listen to my podcast called WrestleNomics Radio, co-hosted with Mookie Ghana, Chris Harrington. That'd be on, I think, all major podcast platforms. Just search for WrestleNomics, and you'll find it. Subscribe. And thank you guys for having me very much.
You have like 1,000 names, too. Anyway, Brandon Howard, everybody. All right, we'd like to thank Brandon Howard for joining us. Brother Nate had to exit stage left. But we'll be back in 2 weeks. Maybe we'll talk about what we got here in Studio B right now, which is the very first NWA TNA pay-per-view back on June 19th, 2002. Watching this, it is a Royal Rumble. Of course, they can't use that. But this was to crown the NWA heavyweight champion. And there are some interesting winners in this bunch. I don't know who this guy is who's wearing like a mock Scott Steiner tights or something. I don't know. Anyway. R-Truth is there, although back then he was K-Crush. We did get to see the Johnsons and plenty of inside jokes from Don West and Ed Ferrara. So go to the Fight Network app on your Fire TV or your Roku, and they have all the TNA. Because for those that may not know, the Fight Network is owned by Anthem. So you actually can get all of the TNA and Impact Wrestling pay-per-views going all the way back to the first one in 2002. I wish Nate was able to stick around. We could have done play-by-play for this match. Although I wouldn't even know who any of these fucking losers are. But well, let's see another guy coming in. Oh, James Mitchell's here. We always like James Mitchell. He's awesome. Let's see who's in now. What fucking unemployed has-been comes down the ring now. Let's see. Oh, it's what's his face? Joe, isn't that what's his name? The guy that ended up being Abyss. Yeah, that guy. Anyway, we'll be back in 2 weeks where we will recap Survivor Series, which takes place not this coming Sunday, but next Sunday down at the Toyota Center in Planet Houston. Of course, we'll also talk about NXT TakeOver Houston. War Games. That's pretty badass. Can't wait for that. And we will. We were hoping to have him on this week, but he's still on vacation. But I think we're going to get Aaron George on our next show because he went to Bound for Glory in Ottawa, and I think he went to the TV tapings as well. So I'm kind of curious to hear his perspective on the live crowd at the Impact Wrestling pay per view. Bound for Glory, which took place this past weekend. So join us in 2 weeks, myself, Brother Nate, hopefully Aaron George, and anybody else we can think of as we will recap Survivor Series and see what happened between AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar. Because, of course, this past Tuesday, AJ Styles defeated Jinder Mahal in England to end the greatest reign in the history of WWE champions. And it's very sad. No more modern-day Maharaja, although some people think he's going to win the belt back. But in any event, it will be AJ and Brock this next Sunday in Houston for the... hey, Conan! Of course we have Conan. That guy can never stay unemployed. In any event, join us in 2 weeks. For Brother Nate, for Brandon Howard, I'm Scott. You've been in the main event. Enjoy Survivor Series next week, and we will recap it.